like the idea of politicizing public safety to impose a tax on Alaskans.
A Senate leader criticizes parts of the governor's new crime reduction plan. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a lab in Kodiak devoted to studying how Alaska's crab populations may fare as the oceans get more acidic.
The expectation in change in pH over the next, say, five decades in Alaska is fairly dramatic.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
State regulators are calling for a review of thousands of oil wells on the North Slope by the end of this year. The Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is ordering all wells on the North Slope that have a similar design to a BP well that failed in the spring of this year to be shut in immediately and reported to the state. The emergency order comes after BP blamed an April oil and gas spill on a piece of a well casing that buckled under pressure from thawing permafrost. The company later shut in five other producing wells that had a similar design. But Kathy Forrester, who sits on the commission, says the company kept the results of its investigation to itself.
When BP was in here last week, we asked them if they had shared the information with all of their operators, and they said they had only shared it with their co-owners.
Forrester says she doesn't know how many wells on the North Slope have a similar design. BP's flawed Prudhoe Bay well was older, and she doesn't think newer fields on the North Slope will have similarly designed wells.
But I don't think many modern wells were drilled that way, but I don't know. And we're doing this just to make sure.
She says operators will not have to shut in the flawed wells permanently. They can pay to have them fixed. Forrester says the permafrost around the wells is not thawing because of climate change. Rather, she blames it on the heat from the oil and gas and other fluids being pumped from thousands of feet underground to the frozen surface. Governor Bill Walker and four of his cabinet members announced a series of steps today to reduce crime. They include more spending on public safety and improved access to mental health and substance abuse treatment. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on the details of Walker's plan.
Governor Walker says reducing crime will require more state government spending in some areas.
Rather than focusing on fixing the blame, we need to be focused on fixing the problem. So that's what we're here about today. One thing we have found out over the past several years, we cannot cut our way into a safer Alaska.
Walker put Attorney General Jana Lindemuth in charge of developing a plan to reduce crime. She says it will take enhanced collaboration across different departments, along with closer work with tribal and municipal law enforcement.
We can each be doing our own thing, but what this is all about is working together better and doing more with what we have.
Lindemuth also says she will seek state funding for five more prosecutors, including one focused specifically on drugs statewide. Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan says his department is working to improve recruitment to fill 43 open state trooper positions and 34 vacant village public safety officer jobs. Monaghan says one barrier to attracting applicants is the annual cycle of layoff notices sent to public workers during disagreements among lawmakers over the state budget.
We don't want to have any pink slips, and the state right now it doesn't attract a lot of good people, as it should. But we are working on a huge plan.
The administration also is hoping to fund more treatment of opioid addiction as a way of reducing thefts caused by drug use. The Department of Health and Social Services is aiming to add space at drug treatment facilities and to increase treatment using medication. Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson says the state's Medicaid expansion is central to the treatment efforts. She says the largely federally funded expansion is helping people who are addicted to drugs when they leave jail.
When someone is leaving a correctional facility, if they have the opportunity to be able to go into treatment or better aftercare, to be able to support the services that they've received in a correctional facility, we know we're going to have better outcomes as a state.
Senate President Pete Kelly says he expects the Senate to support efforts to improve public safety, but he was skeptical of the governor's proposal to introduce a payroll tax.
Addressing public safety is obviously very important, and he's going to find a lot of support from the Senate to do that. Some of the proposals he'll make, I'm sure, will jump on because they're good ideas. I don't like the idea of politicizing public safety for what appears, in my book, to be a philosophical desire by the administration and others to impose a tax on Alaskans.
Walker administration officials have said a payroll tax will help bring the state budget into balance. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Funding for CHIP, the low-income children's health insurance program, expired at the end of September. If Congress doesn't renew the program, several states are projected to run out of money by the end of the year. In Alaska, the issue isn't quite so urgent. The Division of Health Care Services says the state has enough money to continue funding its CHIP program, called Denali Kid Care, until April. In Congress, both parties say they want to renew it, and the House is expected to vote on its bill this week. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California blames Democrats for dragging their feet.
Even though we know a timeline is about to hit a number of states, that they cannot wait for a lack of action here. So yes, I'm upset by this.
House Democrats take issue with the offsets, meaning the cuts the bill would make elsewhere to pay for children's insurance. The House CHIP bill would cut a public health fund established by the Affordable Care Act. It would also shorten the grace period for people to pay for plans they buy under the ACA. And the bill would increase Medicare premiums for seniors earning more than $500,000 a year. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi says Republicans are willing to sacrifice public health to pay for CHIP, but aren't requiring such sacrifices to pay for tax cuts.
So tax cuts for the rich don't have to be offset. They can increase the deficit. Children's health, which has its own benefit to our economy, has to be paid for by other children's health.
The Senate's CHIP bill doesn't specify offsets. Unless both chambers move their bills soon, children's health insurance could get wrapped into the end-of-the-year spending negotiations. An Air Force warrant officer from Juneau was killed over the weekend while serving in Afghanistan. Chief Warrant Officer Jacob Michael Sims died on October 28th in a helicopter crash in the Logar province of Afghanistan. The Department of Defense released the news yesterday. According to the DOD, Sims was assigned to the 4th Battalion, 10th Special Operations Aviation Regiment at an Air Force base just south of Tacoma, Washington. He was in Afghanistan supporting Operation Freedom Sentinel, a counterterrorism mission that began in 2015. On Sunday, Governor Bill Walker ordered U.S. and Alaska flags be immediately lowered to half staff for the next 5 days to honor Officer Sims. In a press release, Walker called Sims a dedicated soldier who made the ultimate sacrifice for the nation. The U.S. military has said 6 other crew members aboard the helicopter were injured in the crash. The Defense Department has provided no details about it, other than saying it wasn't caused by enemy fire. The incident is under investigation. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Coast Guard's annual Arctic Shield wraps up in Kotzebue.
With the extreme weather, the cold, the winds, our chances of finding people is much higher if we can regularly train.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
ocean acidification could threaten some of Alaska's most important fisheries. Researchers warn that populations of red king crab in the Bering Sea, made famous by the show The Deadliest Catch, could collapse by the end of the century. But it's possible the crabs might be able to evolve and adapt to the changing oceans. The big question is, will they have enough time? Rachel Waldholtz from Alaska's Energy Desk went to Kodiak to find out.
About 20 adult male red king crabs move around on the bottom of a tank in Bob Foy's lab in Kodiak. They are giant, they are spiny, they're kind of terrifying, but not to Foy.
Oh my God, you're just grabbing it by the legs? Absolutely. Isn't that dangerous?
As long as you stay away from the first two, the pinchers, they're just fine.
In Foy's lab, there are tanks full of crabs everywhere. Baby Tanner crabs no bigger than a quarter, and adult king crabs the size of my torso. Crabs in Tupperware, crabs in laundry baskets, crabs stacked in little crab houses.
Here we have what we call our crab condominium.
There's a tangle of pipes and wires feeding seawater into the different tanks. Each one is carefully calibrated by temperature and pH. Because what this lab really is a peek into the future. These tanks of water represent the oceans around Alaska decades from now. And Foy says the future is alarming.
The expectation in change in pH over the next, say, 5 decades in Alaska is fairly dramatic.
pH is a measure of how acidic the ocean is. In simple terms, the more carbon dioxide is dissolved in the water, the more acidic it becomes. Ocean acidification is the less well understood fellow traveler to climate change, the other impact of pumping CO2 into the atmosphere. And like climate change, it's happening faster at higher latitudes, like the waters around Alaska, than in the rest of the world. Foy began this work about a decade ago. His lab has been able to run long-term experiments over years, and it's some of the first concrete evidence we have of what ocean acidification might mean for the species that live there. His first results are discouraging. Under conditions similar to what researchers are eventually predicting for Alaska, pretty much all the young red king crabs died.
What that means is if the results in the laboratory are accurate and there's no acclimation, that you would see stock failure about 100 years from now.
In more acidic water, it's harder for many crabs to make and maintain shells. The chemistry just isn't right. But Foy's team found that a bigger problem may be the sheer energy required for crabs to keep their internal pH right when the external pH is wrong. In very acidic water, most red king crabs just didn't make it past the early life stages. But some did. And that's giving researchers hope. Because if the survivors have some trait, something in their genetic makeup that helps them cope with more acidic waters, it's possible they could pass that on to their offspring, and the species could evolve. But with oceans changing so fast, is there time for that?
So that's the question with our animals. Even if they could acclimate in a short period of time, what kind of abilities will they have to do that physiologically if it happens over the scale of 50 years? That's only a handful of generations for a crab species.
This question is something crab fishermen are very aware of.
It's one of those where you don't want to think about it too much, because if you think about it too much, it's pretty depressing. So
Edward Polson is a partner on 2 Bering Sea crab vessels. He grew up in the industry. He says his dad was one of its pioneers. And Polson knows the science. So do his fellow vessel owners. He says everyone's concerned, but it's hard to think about. The potential problems are far enough in the future, and it's not clear there's anything fishermen can do about it.
So I think a lot of us, that this is all we know, this is what we do, and now the government's telling us, your future might be at risk. I think it's a little bit like you want to put your head in the sand and ignore what could be coming down the path in the future.
He says fishermen basically have 2 choices. They can try to diversify their business and branch out into other fisheries, or they can hope the crabs adapt. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Kodiak.
There's a potential alternative natural gas supplier for the Interior Energy Project. Siemens Government Technologies is proposing to transport Cook Inlet gas on the Alaska Railroad to Fairbanks. Roger Purcell with Wasilla-based East-West Pacific Consulting is working with Siemens on the proposal. Purcell maintains there's ample Cook Inlet gas available to feed the state-backed plan to increase gas availability in Fairbanks.
There is reliable quantities of gas from other suppliers in the area at less cost, which would be better for the consumers here in the Fairbanks area.
Purcell says the gas could supplement Cook Inlet gas currently processed and trucked to Fairbanks by Fairbanks Natural Gas, noting that rail offers two key advantages.
It immediately reduces the cost of transportation, and it's also a safety issue where it's a lot safer bringing it by rail than by truck.
He highlights potential to vastly expand the supply as Siemens is working with the U.S. Department of Defense to provide gas as an alternative to coal to fuel heat and energy production at interior military bases.
They have more of a demand in the area, which would then also help lower the cost of gas price to all the consumers here in the Fairbanks area.
Purcell says moving Cook Inlet gas by train was part of the original reason behind the Port McKenzie rail extension near Houston. Last week, Siemens Group representatives gave presentations to the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, or ADA, which is shepherding the project. ADA board member Gary Wilkin of Fairbanks characterizes the Siemens Group proposal as mostly promises, but maintains it could dovetail into the current Interior Energy Project plan if and when demand for gas exceeds what ADA-owned Fairbanks Natural Gas can supply.
We are looking for the lowest price for the most people as quickly as possible for natural gas for Fairbanks. So if those folks think that they can fit under that metric, we're wide open for proposals.
And now is the perfect time to explore this exciting new development that has been offered by Siemens.
That's Pamela Troop, a board member of the North Star Borough's Interior Gas Utility.
We haven't come to our final purchase and sale agreement yet. The board hasn't been presented with the final yet, so we still have room to negotiate that.
Troop is referring to a state-financed deal with ADA to take over the $350 million Interior Energy Project. ADA's board approved the sale last week. The borough's Interior Gas Utility faces a November 30th deadline to decide whether or not to sign on.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
A recently premiered film documenting the effects of suicide on Alaska Natives is gaining attention at national film festivals. We Breathe Again aired on PBS last month, and as KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, it's also being sought as a tool to address suicide in Alaska villages.
Yvonne Peter is Vice Chancellor for Rural Community and Native Education at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He's also one of the producers of We Breathe Again, an hour-long documentary that recently premiered on PBS's World Network channel.
When it means and matters the most, you don't back down. You don't give up.
Communities in crisis and the Alaska Natives who are working to stop the deaths. We Breathe Again on America Reframed.
Peter, who is Gwich'in, says when he was younger at Fashenko, or Arctic Village, suicide was rare. But when his mom relocated the family to Fairbanks, he recalls something a middle school counselor told him and other Alaska Native boys.
You boys are statistically more likely to end up dead or in jail by the time you're 25 than you are to even complete high school.
Peter says he did drop out of high school, but he began to question the system that placed his people at disadvantages. He eventually became a leader and educator. He was already working on suicide prevention in rural Alaska when he was drawn into the film. He says it took the help of a lot of partners to see it to completion 6 years later. But following its premiere on PBS last month, requests have flooded in globally and locally.
People are very interested in hosting follow-up conversations with young people, with adults, with healthcare providers, so they can better understand these dynamics around intergenerational trauma and suicide.
The number of requests to use the film for healing purposes will likely only go up when it shows November 6th at the American Indian Film Festival, followed by a showing at the Red Nations Film Festival November 9th. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The Lake and Peninsula School District is piloting a new calendar this year. They've dubbed it the Subsistence Calendar. By starting later and ending earlier, the new calendar cuts 77.5 hours of instruction and saves more than $400,000. Classes have been underway for almost 2 months now. KDLG's Avery Lill has more on how it's working out in Port Hyden School.
There's a sharp burnt smell in the air as 7th grader Tyler Kroom uses an electric tool to polish a caribou antler. The areas he's already polished gleam bright and white.
I'm making a cribbage board out of it, and I'm going to do crimshaw in it, and we're going to stain it brown. And I got to write a report about my cribbage / crimshaw stained. I've always wanted to make a cribbage board. Me and my dad used to play it.
Projects like these are crucial to making the new subsistence calendar work. Students still have the same requirements they need to fulfill in a year, but they have less time for them. Kirsten Buckmaster is one of Kroom's teachers.
We have, you know, this herd of caribou that come through here, so we have lots of caribou sheds. And I said, we can make your very own caribou cribbage board. And so we were able to tie in lots of different standards. He'll have a writing component. Science and engineering and arts, and then his cultural side, and he's able to connect it with his home. And so I think it's a very meaningful project to him, and so it makes it even more exciting.
Principal Casey Luke says that transitioning to the new calendar has challenged students and teachers to think creatively about how to meet school requirements.
I think the main strengths really show in our students having spent more time with their families and doing what they do in the summer. And ideally, that will also prove positive in May when we let out of school on the 1st. It gives them the opportunity to experience more place-based educational opportunities and to really take advantage of their experiences in the summer to count as some of our standards towards their graduation requirements.
For the 12 schools in the Lake and Peninsula School District, classes started this year on September 5th. They'll let out on May 1st. In Port Hyden, I'm Avery Lill.
Tomorrow marks the end of the Coast Guard's annual operations in the Arctic. KNOM's Zoe Gruskin visited the seasonal base in Kotzebue as things were beginning to wind down.
So we're in the hangar right now at Kotzebue. It's the National Guard hangar. We've got two MH-60 Tango aircraft here.
I'm standing in front of a 22,000-pound helicopter with Lieutenant Jared Carbajal. Painted bright orange and white, the MH-60 Jayhawk is the workhorse of the Coast Guard's search and rescue missions. Since July 1st, two of them have been stationed at Kotzebue, and all summer long, air crews have rotated in and out as part of the Coast Guard's seasonal work throughout the Bering Sea and along the North Slope. It's an annual operation called Arctic Shield. Carbajal, a pilot, will be one of the last to fly out of Kotzebue this year. After a busy season, Arctic Shield wraps up at the end of this month. Arctic Liaison Officer Lieutenant Jeff Schoknecht explains the mission.
Arctic Shield is really just the Coast Guard doing what it normally does in an area that it's not normally, or at least in the past, has been as accessible.
The Coast Guard has been present in Alaskan waters for 150 years. In fact, it was a Coast Guard cutter that brought federal officials to Sitka in 1867 for the territory's formal transfer from Russia. But as Schoknecht explains, in recent years, things have been heating up in Arctic waters in more ways than one.
At least in the sense that the conditions are ice-free and allow merchant traffic, cruise ships, increased boating in general, that's expected to continue to rise.
Diminishing sea ice means more maritime traffic in the Arctic, and with it, higher risk of accidents. Officially begun in 2012, Arctic Shield deploys cutters, aircraft, and personnel to what's called a forward operating location, a temporary home base for operations throughout the Arctic from July through October. The Coast Guard's 17th District, which covers all Alaskan waters, is based in Kodiak. But stationing resources at a more convenient location cuts down response time in an emergency. And that can mean the difference between life and death, Shoknecht says, when one of the biggest challenges is scale.
It's kind of like being headquartered in Miami, but then managing resources that are in Texas and North Dakota. If you were to overlay Alaska onto the lower 48, that's the size of it.
The Coast Guard leases a hangar from the Army National Guard in Kotzebue as a home for Arctic Shield. The hangar was smaller than I expected, but it had more than enough room for the two helicopters, and along one wall, a pile of moose and caribou antlers collected during training missions. Carbajal, the pilot, says that training takes place pretty much every day.
There's a lot of training we have to do. If we don't fly for 2 weeks and then we get launched in a snowstorm at night on our last day, it's just like training for a sport. You're not ready. You're not as good as you could be. With the extreme weather, the cold, the winds, our chances of finding people is much higher if we can regularly train.
Carbajal says with so much activity, they try hard to be good, friendly neighbors, sharing their plans and receiving greetings from locals over VHF radio, trying not to fly too close to anyone's camp, and regularly consulting with government biologists about the location of wildlife so they can steer clear. Carbajal showed me a gigantic map covered in sticky notes, tracking the locations of moose and caribou, seabird rookeries.
Yes, where are the herds? Where's the fishing? Where's the hunting? Where's the whaling? We don't want to be shooting approaches down or hovering over the water, deploying our rescue swimmer in the middle of a pod of beluga whales, for instance.
And in addition to search and rescue, the Coast Guard's Arctic Shield activities include outreach events in coastal communities throughout the region, both to highlight their presence in the Arctic and to help communities prepare for worst-case scenarios like an oil spill or a boating accident in very cold water. It was business as usual as the second MH-60 helicopter returned from a training flight. As of last week, Coast Guard crews had undertaken 20 search and rescue missions since arriving in Kotzebue in July. They'd saved 20 lives and assisted 27 others. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Zoe Gruskin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Russell and Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Avery Lill in Dillingham, and Zoe Gruskin in Kotzebue. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Raven Alaska, committed to customer safety and satisfaction, reminding Alaska that now is a great time to fly. Learn more at flyravn.com. The Bristol Bay Subsistence Regional Advisory Council is meeting in Dillingham November 1st and 2nd at the Dillingham Middle School Gym from 8:30 to 5 to discuss proposals to change federal subsistence wildlife and trapping regulations for the 2018 to 2020 regulatory years and other issues related to subsistence. The public is encouraged to participate either in person or by teleconference. For all information about the meetings, go online to doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. Contact the Office of Subsistence Management to receive meeting documents or to request special accommodation needs by 7 business days prior to the meeting. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.